Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, what would you do, like, if you were on the verge of a 2020 game, something that hasn't been done since Wilt, would you stat chase like that?
Hell yeah, I would, man. Do you remember Ricky Davis? He played for the Cavs, and do you remember that? For those of you who don't remember, he had like 20, 10, and 9 or something. And he was not the type of dude to get a triple double.
Yeah.
Not assists, especially in a game. He was right. A scorer, and he'd occasionally board. But anyway, he's got like 20, 10, and 9, and there's like 5 seconds left, and and the 9 is in the rebounding category.
Yeah.
And he knows that, like, he can't get another rebound, so he shoots the ball at the opposite rim and gets the ball back, hoping that counts as a rebound. So he shoots at the other team's goal. Yeah. Thinking he'll be credited for a rebound on that, and he was not. That's my favorite stat chasing triple double moment in NBA history. But yeah, man, look, like, Russ, maybe rightfully to some extent, gets some crap for stat chasing, but like 2020, man, that is not, you know, that's not anything to be frowned upon or laughed at. Even if the pursuit of it in the last couple of minutes was very obvious, that's also not unusual, right? To get a guy when you're up and, you know, have a comfortable lead. I'm fine with it. And like, I'm in no way going to denigrate that. That's incredible, no matter what the circumstances are.
I'm mostly of the same stance, like 99%, and even that 1%, I just found it funny. Like, you and I were laughing at. So he attacked two rebounds. One was the offensive board that he got from Ascala on a free throw, right? Mm-hmm. And what was really funny was, I believe Ray Felton was trying to sub in, like Donovan was trying to sub Felton into the game, on that play, and Russ was like, no.
Yeah, no, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
You know, Jeannie, my girlfriend Jeannie brought up the, I wonder what would have happened. Probably my biggest, like, I wonder what would have happened moment as a Laker fan is if Kobe doesn't get subbed out after dropping 62 and three quarters against Dallas. They were up by like 28 or something like that. Yeah. And Kobe was fine with it. The whole story is like, I feel like it was Brian Shaw or someone like that was like, you sure you don't want to like go for 80?
Right.
And Kobe, being Kobe, was like, it's fine. I'll have another chance to do that. Like, how confident and arrogant in all of those things. And I mean that in the most wonderful of ways. Do you have to be like, it's fine, I'll get 80 some other day, and then actually do it.
And then do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what was crazy. There's some talk going around right now in the reaction to the game that Russ kind of sort of called a shot.
Yeah.
That he was saying for Nipsey that he was right, like, he 60s, wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, that's bonkers, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
To call that out. Like something that hasn't been done. What was the date? 63?
68. Chamberlain at 68, man.
Good Lord. He's
so, yeah, man.
Different cat.
Yeah, just hats off to him. Like, no, yeah, some of the chasing toward the end of it. But he had like 11 dimes in the first quarter, 10, 11 in the first quarter. He's going to get his 20 points on most nights. And, you know, and then just to get 20 boards, which is a career high. Yeah, it was a little funny down the stretch, but it ain't the first time that happened. And 2020 is 2020. It's not like, not more to say.
What was funny, you and I were joking, but Dennis Schroeder took a shot from like the top of the key that went in.
Yes.
And it was just, he like actually pointed to Russ like, my bad, dude. I usually suck from out here. It was great. It was a great exchange. So that was what happened. The Lakers wind up losing another one, and who gives a shit? Like, it's there's four games left. These games don't matter at all, not even a little bit. So what we're going to do is we're going to segue over to the other side of the point guard equation, and this one was Rajon Rondo. I need you to either walk me off of the ledge on my stance on Rondo, or... And then also, you know, kind of calm me down a little bit in regards to, I'm like legitimately terrified that he's back next year. Mm-hmm. And that just, it makes me really nervous. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and then we're going to extend that conversation out to the rest of the free agents to be, which guys we would want back, what, you know, order of preference for all of them. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick second, pay a couple bills, and when we come back, we're going to start with Rajon Rondo, who I said before the show, I think might be the worst player in the NBA right now. When you think about the load that he's been given, he's a tank commander. So we'll come back to that here in a second. Today's show is brought to you in part by Wyze. That's W-Y-Z-E. Do you have anything in your house that you feel like you need to keep an eye on at all times, or at least as often as you possibly can? Well, then Wyze is the solution for you. For only $20, you can mount one of these cameras. It has 1080p video. It's super clear. They have night vision. They have two-way audio. For example, right before I started recording this, like literally 5 seconds ago, my dog started barking. If I was not home and I noticed that she was barking, or I just wanted to make sure I could check up on her, and in the process of checking up on her, I found out that she was barking, I could whistle at her through this two-way audio, and that generally works pretty well. So I want you guys to check out Wyze.com, Wyze.com/locked, to check out everything that they have to offer. They have great packages and an incredible app that you can log into as well if you become a customer. So check them out. That's Wyze.com/locked to take advantage of the special offer. Let's get back to the show. So when Kobe was in his farewell tour, and even the couple years before it, right, where Byron just kind of let him run amok with whatever, I, you know, it was tough for me to watch because he was, like, statistically speaking, really, really bad, right?
Yeah.
And I'm watching this now with Rondo where, you know, he was handed the keys on offense. He's just given entire first quarters to play for some reason. And it makes me nervous on a couple levels. One, just on a basketball level, because I don't want to watch him play, especially when there's an objectively better player that we should be watching instead in Alex Caruso. But two, it makes me nervous that Rondo, like, statistically speaking, I believe he had a good game again, right? Just by counting numbers and the only analytics that, like, somebody like Magic would pay attention to. And it makes me nervous. Like, I'm a lot more nervous than I wish I was, or that he might be back next season. So either A, talk me off the ledge here and saying that he is not the worst basketball player in the NBA, who still gets a role, or B, convince me that he's definitely not back next season.
I don't think I can do the second one. I'm concerned about that too, man. And in terms of, is he the worst guy that gets big minutes? I mean, I don't know. There are a few guys that are past their prime. This is also a weird circumstance where, you know, everybody's hurt. They're kind of playing out the string. But you know, all told, he's averaging nearly 30 minutes per game this season over the course of 43 games. He missed most of the season that mattered.
Yeah.
Like, I think that he had only played like 14 games by the time he came back from that second-hand injury, one of which was, you know, the high moment of the season when the Lakers beat the Warriors on Christmas to move to 20-14. Rondo was fantastic in that game, and he was everything that, you know, the argument for him. Yeah, like the argument for him, he was all of those things in that. And then by the time he came back, you know, LeBron wasn't quite back yet. Lonzo had gotten hurt. The team we didn't know it at the time, but the team had begun its process of falling apart. So I think Rondo gets largely an incomplete grade for much of the season. That being said, and that framing is about as kind as I can be to him.
Yeah.
He's going to be 34 at this time next season. And the thing that he does well, if the Lakers are going to be a good team, they're going to have 3, 4, maybe 5 guys better at
who do
in
better.
Terms of like put the ball in their hands, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'd rather have Brandon Ingram have the ball. LeBron's an obvious one, right? Mm-hmm. Hopefully we sign a max guy, right? And that guy will be a guy that and so like the thing that he does well being, you know, there being 4 or 5 guys being superior to him when you're that bad on defense and he's shot the ball fairly well, but most of that's from guys going under screens, and it's not like he's a catch and shoot guy in a spot.
I think
guy.
Like 70% of his threes that he's shooting are unassisted, the ones that he's making.
Yeah, they're like wide
open. He's not spacing the floor.
Teams are saying just go ahead and shoot it. We'll live with it. So I think it's difficult to make an argument for role players whose motors are low, and his talent dictates at this point that he's a role player, but he does not have, like, he was once upon a time, he was one of my favorite players in the league. Mm-hmm. He was a great defender. He could do all sorts of, and I love those type of guys that are kind of weird and not can dominate a game and score 5 points. Right. Mm-hmm. That certainly goes into my affinity for Lonzo. Right. He was one of those guys at a very high level once upon a time, but he does not have the type of game that translates into being effective as an older player.
Yeah.
And some guys can make that transition from a star in their younger years to being a role player in their mid-30s. And I just don't think Rondo's that guy. And I share the concern that he'll be brought back.
What makes me nervous about Rondo coming back is that he probably means that they don't bring back they don't acquire a good third point guard. And if you go through another season where Lonzo gets hurt and then you're relying on Rajon Rondo as your primary point guard and you don't have a third point guard out there who can either spell him or push him for the majority of those minutes, like that's another season that's just gone, you know?
Yeah.
And look, like, last year's team obviously wasn't going to do anything. They won, what, 35 games? Mm-hmm. And, like, maybe if they have a better point guard instead of Tyler Ennis, they win 38, right?
Sure.
It doesn't, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. But, like, this season, I would say if they had Seth Curry in Rondo's place, they're, I don't know, I would probably say a good 5 or 6 games better, just because he fits so much better and, like, actually cares about defense.
Yeah, like, the thing with Rondo is, and plus minus is a noisy stat that, you know, you can't, especially in singular games, but he is so much worse than pretty much everybody else in that. And, like, the Lakers get outscored, I think, by 5.5 points per 100 possessions when Rondo and LeBron are on the court, and no other player that plays significant minutes is a negative at all. It's hard to be worse than an average team when LeBron James is on the court. And that's well below that. And a part of that is, you know, you can apply the actual elements of his game to the reasons why that's the case. And we've gone over the ball dominance and the lack of spot up shooting and him being awful on the defensive end. But to me, his biggest detriment is how much he dominates the basketball.
Yeah.
That's going to lead to him averaging 8 assists per game, but it's also going to lead to the offense not being particularly good when he's on the court and him being absolutely awful on the defensive. And that's what leads to nights like tonight where he's a minus 25.
Yeah. Right. When I said earlier that he had, like, a decent game, I just meant, like, in terms of stats.
No, I totally know what you mean. And that's what concerns me. Like, hey, 7 points, 9 assists. You're going to get 9 assists when you have the ball in your hands that much. And 10 rebounds, and I'll tip my hat to that. But, you know, when you're scoring as a big part of it, too, is the offense is often 4-on-5 in that they take everything else away. And, like, they'll give Rondo layups, which he often passes up.
Yep.
So, you know, he actually, even though he's getting individual assists, he actually makes the offense a lot more difficult because everybody else is just so much more defended.
It's like having a square wheel out there. Like, technically, you might be able to move the vehicle forward, but it's not going to be efficient, you know? And, like, the other thing, too, with Rondo, and this is a concern of mine with a former player, especially a former point guard, as the lead of the organization, right, is it Magic? We already know this. Rondo said it heading into this year that Magic was on the phone with him for 2 summers.
Yeah.
That he pursued him for 2 summers. And you know, you have games like this where Magic is going to say, oh, well, plus minus is a newfangled stat. Look at, give me 10, 9, and whatever, and call it a day for my backup point guard. Like, no, that's not, it's not a great way to build a team. And that's what makes me the most nervous here, is that you have somebody in Rondo whom all the old players are going to love, who, you know, especially if you have, like, Mark Jackson or Tyronn Lue or Jason Kidd as the head coach, and then you combine that with Magic as the president of basketball operations, and even Pelinka, I believe, was a point guard too, right? And so, like, all these guys are going to look at Rondo in the sense, like, the traditional statistical sense, and say, oh, yeah, he's a perfectly great backup point guard, but he really isn't, is a concern.
Yeah, and to be fair, he was regarded as the best leader of the veterans and somebody that the kids really look up to in terms of, you know, watching film and all of those things. And I do think that those things are true. The whole, like, Rondo is a coach on the floor and this genius on the floor, I think those days are gone. And I actually think that he does way more dumb stuff than he does stuff that's like where I watch him like, oh, that's brilliant. And from perhaps a more practical sense, I think the Lakers need a different type of guard backing up Lonzo.
Yeah. Need more of a combo guard.
Yeah, you need somebody who can score off of ball screens. Mm-hmm. And that's a weakness of Lonzo's to a severe extent when compared to other point guards. I don't think that duplicating a guy in, you know, from a skill set perspective and not having that, it's very strange. The Lakers not having a guy who can handle the ball and come off of a screen and score off of that. Mm-hmm. Last guy they had like that was Clarkson, and then Lou Williams before then. But having guys who, like KCP, can't really handle the ball well enough to do that. Lonzo, gone over him. Rondo obviously isn't a scorer. Josh Hart doesn't have the ball handling ability to be able to do that. The Lakers might be the only team in the league that doesn't have a single guard who can score off of a ball screen. The closest to that is Lance Stephenson, and even then he's more of an ISO, you know, make him dance type of guy rather than a guy who's running off of conventional pick and roll action. Yeah. As much as I love Lonzo, they need a guard that is able to do that, even if he's just Lonzo's backup. They need that arrow in the quiver.
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing about Lonzo's size is that whatever guard that player might be, you can play him side by side with Lonzo.
Very much so.
And you know, Rondo and Lonzo, you can't quite play him side by side. They could try it, you know, but it would make me a little nervous. So I don't know. It's something that we have now seen for 2 years where they thought the backup point guard, they devalued the backup point guard, or in this case, the backup to the backup, and they didn't use Caruso enough. And you know, it's just small things like that that derail potentially really good seasons.
Yeah.
All right, we are going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we are going to extend this conversation out to the rest of the team's free agents. There are only 4 games left here. They're going to have to start making these decisions on guys who, you know, a lot of them are saying stuff along the lines of they want to come back, or that they didn't feel like there was enough of too many injuries got in the way of finding out how good the roster could actually be. Again, that makes me real nervous. As long as we don't hear that from the front office, then I'm all right. But
I think that's exactly what we're going to hear from the front office.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated so about what the exit interviews are going to be like.
Yeah. You know? I do hope that, like, if you say something like that, so the one, all right, well, let's take a quick second. We'll come back and extend that conversation. It's a bit of a tangent, but we can go there. So my one frustration with the way teams get covered sometimes is, and this isn't even a team thing, like this is a thing with journalism as a whole, where people are just allowed to lie or say untrue things. And because, you know, in political conversations, that person, it's an opportunity to talk to the person that you're interviewing. And if you piss them off, then that thing ends it. And you missed out on that interview that was probably tough to get in the first place. And I think you see it here with people like, you know, with people high enough up in organizations here, where if Magic comes out or Pelinka comes out and says, we really like this roster, just unfortunately we ran into the injury bug, and those mistakes that, you know, we kept hearing about all year long, well, those weren't actually mistakes. They were we just ran into tough luck. And you know, because of the setting in a scrum or in a presser, you don't get like the back and forth there where you say, like, actually, no,
it's
that's not necessarily true. And you can't do that because you have to have relationships with the people that you're covering.
It's not just that. I don't think people realize this actually gives me an opportunity to get something off my chest that I've wanted to explain to. And this is something that I had a misperception of.
Yep.
The whole environment is controlled.
Yeah.
Like last year at the exit interviews, I tried to, it was either the exits or the intro to this season, but I think it was the exits. I tried to ask Magic and Polenko a question.
Yeah.
They didn't let me ask them a question. Like I raised my hand and all of that, and they were like, yeah, you know, pretending like they didn't see my hand up.
Right.
Because I am not as beholden to, you know, an organization above me that can punish me. Right. Yeah. Right. And now they could always say you're not allowed back here, and that would suck, but it also would not prevent me from doing what I'm doing. But the point is not that like I'm some oppressed truth teller and or anything like that. It's that it's a controlled environment, and like what is told to the media, like they have people who that's their job is to control how the message gets out. I'd actually argue that they need to be a little more controlling, stricter about that. Probably. You and I have talked about that with like injury deadlines and things like that. But the last thing they want is a fanboy like me getting into a back and forth like, well, no, you know, what about the shooting? What about the five position? Why was this such a terrible team that you put together? You know, it didn't even make sense, especially considering that LeBron wasn't going to play a lot of minutes at the five. So it's not something where reporters and so just to go through like a regular day. Sorry, I'm off on a bit of a tangent, but I want to like let people behind the curtain a little bit. If you're at a practice and there are practices and shoot arounds happen on game days and practices happen on non-game days. If you're on a practice day, you'll usually get two players come out and Luke. Luke comes out for all of them. Mm-hmm. And then on shoot-arounds, you'll get just Luke. With LeBron coming in this year, it was different than last year, where LeBron will often talk on shoot-around days too. But in terms of like, hey, why don't you ask about this type of thing? It's not as you don't have the freedom that you might think. And it's just this like 15-minute window where you get to ask them, and it's in this controlled environment.
People have questions that they want to ask. And
right. And you can get into a little bit of discussion and whatnot, but like availability, access to Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, that's especially restricted, right? You have to be a reporter, which I'm not, that has access to those guys off of those formal type of settings, which I don't, in order to really be able to ask the questions that often need to be asked. That said, we will see. I have some confidence in the people who covered the team that they're going to.
This is the best the beat has ever been.
I agree. And I can't go too deep into it, but I do think that some of the right questions are going to be asked by the right people at the exit interviews. At least I hope they are.
It's actually a talent asking those questions. You know,
it's way harder than it seems.
It's not nearly. And so what I was saying earlier wasn't necessarily I wasn't crapping on the people who cover the team or people who do this regularly. It's legitimately a tough thing to do. And then also, because of like you're saying that these things are so controlled, and like all it takes. So if I have access to Magic, and the only thing he's ever heard from me is, Magic, your roster sucks. You know what that's going to do to the access I ever get to Magic ever again?
Well, and also the way that it's controlled means that he can answer that in a way where he's like, oh, well, you know, it was a tough year, but we had injuries and, you know, we're going to go get him next year.
Right.
And now, not only what you just said, you also didn't really get the, like, these guys, like, part of their job is to answer questions professionally and be a little slippery with how they answer them and not tell you what they might tell you if you were their friend over a beer in a private type of place, right? They know the cameras are on. They know that every word's being scrutinized. Magic can act, this is another example, Magic can actually be a little too loose with what he says in that respect.
Probably. So, I would agree. All right, let's quickly get back to the task at hand here, and this is going to be only on the surface level. We'll get down and we'll do player reviews as the season winds down and stuff like that. But is there, if you had to say one player that you definitively want to see back on the Lakers next season, who would it be?
Can I say someone other than Alex Caruso? Can Caruso just be somebody that's like, I want him as my third point guard?
I can't believe they haven't extended him already.
I think that fingers crossed that time will come. I think that he's, he's certainly playing like that. And I hope other teams don't recognize
that's
that.
Why I'm nervous.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'd actually like JaVale back.
Okay.
Between he had a season that was great at the beginning and great at the end and really awful in between. You and I talked about how like his story about the pneumonia really knocking him on his ass for 2 months. It checks out.
Yep.
I think it does. And he's on a vet minimum deal. The problem was never JaVale. The problem was always we have to rely on him too much.
Yeah.
So a guy who's an above the rim threat that can run the floor and block shots and hopefully play, 15 minutes per game instead of what he's had to carry this year. If you can get that, I thought he was a really good value add.
To start the year, he was defensive player of the year candidate. He was blocking everything.
So he's the guy, Lance was a little better than I expected him to be. KCP was awful until the games didn't matter anymore, and now he's lighting it up, and that's really frustrating. I'm done with KCP. We've talked about Rondo. Lance has been better than I expected, but I don't want him back. I like the idea of Bullock better than how he's played, and I want to make excuses for him about, the team had kind of fallen to crap, and he's an organized player, more than a guy who can freelance. So, but that's where I'm at. If I had to pick one guy, it'd be JaVale. How about you?
This is going to be a cop-out. There's nobody on the team who I would say definitively with no disclaimers, I want them back. Because even with JaVale, yes, his story checks out regarding the pneumonia and all that, but he also moped. And if he goes into next season hoping for anything more than 15 or so minutes a game, then mopes as a result of not getting that type of a role, then that's not going to end well for whoever the coach is going to be there. And then, you went down the line, obviously no to Rondo. Bullock is the next guy on the list who I would want back the most. But, there's the disclaimer. There's the counter to my own point here is he. It's not that I would have ever expected him to actually lift anybody around him, but he also, when adversity hit, he kind of went into a shell of himself, right?
Yeah, just he joined everybody else, really.
Yeah, and so, I don't know, there's a such thing as throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but there's also, to me, this season's going to leave such a taste in my mouth that I'm just like, you know what, man? The chances are we'll find other players on the open market who can do these things that other players we were hoping these guys were able to do this season, and don't come with the caveats that we have built over for everybody else.
Here's my best devil's advocate argument that I don't even entirely believe, but
it's what we're here for.
Isn't part of the issue that the Lakers have had over the last few years the massive roster turnover they've had every single year?
Mm-hmm.
So is there some argument to be made that just any degree of continuity is worthwhile?
Yeah, I think so. But I think we're getting some of that from the young core.
don't put that to take, Anthony.
That's a fair point. Fair chuckle. That was a fair. but hopefully, we get some of the continuity back from some of these young guys coming back and maybe growing into the roles that we hope to see from them this year. My thing is, all right, so the things that the Lakers really struggled with this year, shooting even from the shooters, I don't think that's so much a personnel concern as it is an organizational, a cultural concern. That they just, the way I kind of phrased it earlier this year when it was asked on an iTunes question, why did everybody come over here and forget how to shoot, was, well, the Lakers are kind of an antiquated organization, and if they aren't going to, you're going to be good at, you're going to excel at, I think to use a phrase you use on here, is you're going to focus on the things that you're good at, right? So the Lakers are really good at the big things, right? Obviously getting LeBron James, but on the margins and providing a situation where your marginal players can actually fully excel, that and it isn't just a result of LeBron. That's where the Lakers, it might not even matter what personnel they have in there. They have to address some of these organizational, these structural concerns that lead to the struggles that it didn't matter over the course of the season who was shooting it anyway.
Yeah, no, I think that that's right on point. And I think it comes down to a very simple idea of, from a basketball perspective, the Lakers do very little to make things easier for their players, mm-hmm. which is ironic because a lot of the off the court stuff in terms of their, the travel and, you know, lodging situations and just like all of the, what is it like to be a Laker as an experience off of the court? They're great at that stuff, yeah. man. And that is stuff that is appealing to players, how they treat players, how they honor a Dwayne Wade coming into town. We talked about that, yeah. right? Like all of that stuff, they're really great at on the court. Like when the coaching scheme is bad, when the personnel pieces don't fit, you don't have a shooting coach, you have this antiquated overall view of overall approach toward a basketball mm-hmm. organization, basketball operations that you pointed out. Those are things, they actually make things harder on yeah. the guys. And that's part of the reason why we see guys thriving a little bit when they're out of this. And then when they come from another environment, when they come here and it's like, oh, like this is, they're not producing at the same level or the same level of efficiency that they were elsewhere. I think a lot of that has to do with everything that they're doing, as you're saying.
Yeah. And that would be, you know, to build on the devil's advocate point that you made earlier and the benefits of continuity. I guess some of that is what we're talking about here, right? Is
yeah, the, for sure,
the,
man.
The cultural there as well. So, you know, you combine all these things and yeah, I think there are cases to be made for the Reggie Bullocks, the JaVales, lesser to the extent with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who did a lot. Like, he was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for the vast majority of the year.
he was, yes.
And so, like, so for some of these guys, there are cases to be made. But, you know, it's hard for me not to feel as if it doesn't matter. You know, unless these things actually get addressed, and these are questions that I hope do come up in the postseason scrums with the exit interviews, right?
Yeah.
Are you going to hire a shooting coach? That became a topic over the course of the year. Are you going to upgrade the analytics department, the training and the medical staff? Like these things that are on the margins that actually really help the players while they're Lakers, those are things that the Lakers really need to address. Otherwise, like, you could get, it's not to say that Klay Thompson would come here and forget how to shoot, but he might not shoot at the same rate that he shoots right now in Golden State, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's all relative. So if Reggie Bullock isn't as good a shooter as Klay Thompson, and then he comes here and he drops off even further, well, then that's where you get these gaps in the margins that really come up to bite the team. So it's a complicated conversation we're going to have a few times over the course of the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, so much is dictated by whether or not they get that max guy.
Yeah.
Because, like, this summer I think is going to be either really good or really bad. Because yeah. if they don't sign that max guy, the obvious guys that you can be a casual fan yeah. and know, hey, you want that guy on your team. If they don't sign him, they're going to be left with – they're going to have to fill the roster with – guys who are less obvious. They're gonna have to find value deals.
Yeah.
And they've proven that to be one of their biggest weaknesses as an yep. organization. And so there's a good chance that even if it's not the same players, it's similar, like they signed him to that type right. of deal, you right. know? And whereas if they get the max guy, you're looking for a room exception player and vet minimum type guys who it's hard to screw those up too badly because just your pool is so yeah. shallow that if you can get anything out of those guys, it's a bit of a win.
And they get the added benefit. If they get that second max guy, their pool is larger than most other teams' pools. For those,
that's a good point for those guys, for your ring chasers and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so much of this offseason is going to be dictated by the max contract that they offer. And, you know, we'll keep on coming back to it. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. We will be back at it again tomorrow. I'll see if I can grab some. I should be able to. That'll do it for that, though. Again, shouts to Himalaya. They're just like the mountain range in spelling and pronunciation. So check those guys out if you're looking for a podcast platform. We will talk to you again tomorrow, though. Have a good one.